Dhritarashtra uvacha.
Dhritarashtra uvacha.
Dhritarashtra said.
Yatha.
As. Vadati. Speak. Kalyanim. Auspicious. Vacham.
Words.
Dana.
Of charity.
Pate.
O
Master. Bhavan.
You.
Tata.
So.
Anaya.
By this.
Natripyami. I am not satiated. Martyaha.
Immortal.
Prapya.
Attaining.
Yata.
As if.
Amritam. The nectar of immortality. Dhritarashtra said, O Master of Charity, Dhanapate. Dhanapate means the Master of Charity, which is interesting. I can never be satiated while hearing your auspicious words. Right? Natripyami. I could never be satisfied. Or it could be put in a different way. When I hear your words, I'm always eager to hear more. That's really what it means. Kalyanim means auspicious. Vatati kalyanim, your auspicious speech. Indeed, I am like a mortal who has obtained the nectar of the gods. Martyaha means one who dies. I am like a person who is subject to death, but who has been enlivened by receiving the nectar of your instructions. Purport. Interesting purport. By Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. It's been paraphrased here. In the opinion of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, Dhritarashtra was in fact proud and felt he already knew everything Akrura was speaking, but to maintain diplomatic gravity, he spoke as a saintly gentleman. What's that called? Yes, diplomacy. Diplomacy. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmaye Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langthayate Girim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatalinam. So let's have a look at some of these. There's some interesting points here. Dhritarashtra uvacha. He is addressing Akrura Dhanapate or Dhanapati, the Master of Charity. And it's interesting, he's only receiving instructions or words from Akrura. Ordinarily, we would think charity is in giving some wealth or giving some possessions. But according to the Vedic system, the greatest charity is to give people spiritual instruction. Right? This is the greatest charity. And Prabhupada would emphasize this point very often. Because the devotees would be criticized. Oh, your Hare Krishnas are just parasites. You're just living off of the rest of society. You're living like a beggar or like beggars. Why don't you go and get a job? Huh? The way this would be criticised. And Prabhupada's response to that always would be, we are performing the most valuable, the most munificent, the most beneficent welfare work for people. And that welfare work is giving them instructions, giving them knowledge, vidya dana. This is real charity. Instructing people as to their true identity. Otherwise, they're in ignorance. As we're about to do, Dhritarashtra is in ignorance. He's misbehaving. And so Akrura, as his friend, true friend, real friend, is giving him instructions as to his identity and how he should act properly in a detached fashion for the benefit of everybody, not seeing friends and enemies, relatives and those not related. You know, basically, it's a skin disease. You are my relative, and so therefore I like you. And you're not my relative, and so therefore I don't like you. Whereas, as Prabhupada points out, you know, we're all strangers. We don't know each other. And yet we happen to be born out of the womb of somebody, of our mother, then automatically there's some affection or affinity. And yet we're strangers. Never met before. But all of a sudden, just by that bond of that blood and skin and bones and other things, by that relationship, we think that we have some affection for each other. Although I'm sure at some point in time parents wonder. Parents start to wonder. I'm sure my parents were wondering, well, is this guy really on our side? Or who does he really belong to? So to revive a person's proper understanding of who they are and how they should act, that instruction is considered to be here the greatest charity that you could give somebody. Reawaken their spiritual understanding. You're not the body, you're a spirit soul. Basic instruction. And, you know, behave properly. Of course, it's interesting. Dhritarashtra is calling him the master of charity. Your instructions are enlivening for me. They're the most uplifting, but of course he still intended to ignore them, which is another thing. This is Dhritarashtra's conceit, if you like, pride. And that is brought out in the next verses. It comes out. But Dhritarashtra is at least externally praising the good qualities of Akrura. The messages of Krishna consciousness, the messages of divine instruction, if you like, spiritual instruction, are actually very, very pleasing to the ear. Very attractive. Very powerful. And so for the devotees, they are always eager to hear the topics related to spiritual subject matter. For them, it's like the instructions of the acharyas, the instructions of the Vedas, the instructions of the saintly devotees, to them, it's just like nectar, amrita. Because basically, the Bhagavatam explains, it actually it revives our eternal identity. And as a result of that resuscitation, if you like, one then doesn't have to undergo the pangs and the pains of material miseries, of material existence. Well, the physical body may undergo the pains and pangs. You know, there's that story in Shruta Kirti's book where Shruta Kirti was feeling really sick. And one day in the class, this is after about a month in India, in the evening class, he'd fallen asleep, nodded off in front of Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada chastised him and said, you know, sit up, pay attention, which, you know, he woke up. Prabhupada said, if you need some sleep, go and take rest. So anyway, after that, Chamsundra saw him and he laughed. He said, ah, you've got jaundice. His eyes were all yellow. And he came to Srila Prabhupada and told him, I've got jaundice, I'm not feeling well. And Prabhupada said, what are your symptoms? And he said, I'm feeling weak, and my urine is yellow, and I can't digest my food. And Prabhupada's response to him was, oh, I must have jaundice too then. I must have jaundice too. And Prabhupada said to him, you know, can you do your service? And he said, yes, I can do my service. He said, all right, carry on. And Shruti Kirti took that to indicate that, you know, life is a struggle. I don't know if you've noticed or not, but life is a struggle. Sometimes you're sick, sometimes your head hurts, sometimes the mind hurts. You know, whatever we do, it's rare for there to be a day where everything just goes, you know, smoothly like clockwork, and, you know, everything goes your way. It just doesn't happen. The material world is designed in such a way so that there will always be struggle. Always. So remind us, the material world is not where we're meant to be. We're supposed to, in the spiritual world, every word is a song, every step is a dance. That's the place where everything goes very smoothly. But in the material world, everything is designed to be problematic, to be difficult. Yet, for the devotees, when because the devotees understand the nature of the material world, and even though there may be sufferings or difficulties for the material body, still, because they're absorbed in a transcendental consciousness, and even though there may be sufferings of the body, they're actually able to remain aloof from it. On the basis of this spiritual or transcendental vision, transcendental consciousness, spiritual consciousness, Krishna consciousness, basically. So the devotees like to hear discussions about nashta prayeshu abhadreshu, the abhadra or inauspicious things that are in the heart are removed by a regular hearing of the Bhagavatam. Nitya Bhagavata Sevaya. By regularly hearing and chanting, then the inauspiciousness, the ignorance, the confusion, the inability to see what's actually taking place, what's actually going on, is removed by Krishna consciousness. So therefore, the devotees love to hear about these topics. Bhavanti hrit krana rasayana kata. It enlivens the heart. One becomes enthused. This rasayana means tonic. Just like the devotees, when they go to India, for the first time, they usually come back with these, you know, tonics, Brahma Rasayam. The Kavirajas tell them, you need brain food. And they sell them this Rasayam, tonic, meant to invigorate the brain cells. But the most invigorating is to hear the topics tusyanti cha ramanti cha. The devotees get satisfaction and happiness by always thinking about, always hearing matschita mat prana. Matschita mat kata prana buddhayanta parasparam. They get great satisfaction and happiness out of hearing and chanting about Krishna. Katayantas cha mam nityam. The Krishna kata. So that's what Dhritarashtra is saying, although he's being duplicit in one sense. But this is one of the beauties, if you like, one of the attractive features of Vedic culture. And what we see within Indian culture, everybody's very respectful. Right? They'll be very respectful. They'll hear you out, and then they'll completely ignore what you just told them. So this is what Dhritarashtra's saying. Yes, yes, your words are like nectar. Then he goes on to say why he can't follow them. But Vedic culture is, Prabhupada gives the example, Vedic culture is like an elephant, a dead elephant. Right? Even a dead elephant has usage. You can use the tusks, you can use the skin, you can use the hairs. The hairs of the elephant on his tail. Yeah, there are different things. You can use all of these things. So Prabhupada says, even though Vedic culture is dead, still the remnant of it that exists within Indian culture, if you like, is still valuable, extremely valuable. And one of the valuable relics, if you like, is this being respectful to others. Even if you're not going to take notice of what they're telling you to do, you're still respectful to them. In the Western culture, say, ah, mate, he wants to listen to you. Kind of mood, attitude. But in the Vedic culture, everybody is respectful, tolerant and respectful of others. Another story I read before I went to bed last night. The devotees, when Prabhupada was in Mumbai, he would stay at the Mahadevi's flat. Very friendly family. Actually, one of the daughters of Mr. Mahadevi is an initiated ISKCON devotee. Regularly visits the Mumbai temple. And anyway, they used to borrow Mr. Mahadevi as ambassador and go for a drive down to the beach, and then Prabhupada would walk up and down the beach for his morning exercise. So anyway, they'd gone for their morning walk and they came back and they got hopped into the car, and Shyama Sundara put the keys in the ignition and tried to start it up and it wouldn't start. He tried and tried and tried, he couldn't get it going, and he said to Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, this is useless, the keys are useless, I'm going to have to go back to the Mahadevi's and get the right key or get it fixed up." So he hopped in the cab and drove off. Anyway, Sruta Kitty and Prabhupada just sat in the car and were chanting japa, and then a couple of gentlemen came along and hopped in the car, sat down, and put the key in the car and turned it on. And they'd got in the wrong ambassador. the gentleman just chatting to them. And Prabhupada was just talking to them and asking how they were. Yeah, then he took them home. They took them home. And Prabhupada said, "Would you like to come up and have prasadam?" They said, "No, no, no, we've got to go to work. We've got meetings to attend." Prabhupada said, "You know, this is the difference between Indian and American culture. You know, if we were sitting in somebody else's car in America, they'd throw us out. They'd take us off to the police. So what are you doing in our car? Get out of here." He said, "In Indian culture, you're sitting in somebody's car," and he said, "you know, every ambassador in India, even these days, looks the same. So it's quite, you know, excusable that you hop into somebody else's car." But see the culture. They weren't perturbed that somebody else was sitting in their car, and in fact, they drove them to where they wanted to go. Then Prabhupada wanted to give them prasadam. Interesting. Sruta Kitty makes the point. He said, whenever Prabhupada met somebody, then he always wanted to give them prasadam. Whoever he met, whoever he came in contact with, he would always try to give them some prasadam. Prabhupada said Krishna consciousness is the kitchen religion. We experience that by distributing prasadam. We make so many friends with so many people. Defeats everybody's philosophical arguments or apprehensions or whatever it is about Krishna consciousness. Just give them prasadam and then they relax. So this culture of tolerance and respect in Vedic culture is very important. We need to be very tolerant and respectful of others. In fact, if you're living in a Hare Krishna temple, you will become eventually you'll learn tolerance and respect. We have to put up with all sorts of people walking through the gates. But again, that's that liberality in distributing Krishna consciousness to others. In one sense, the reason why we want to distribute so much prasadam to people is so that we can pacify them, elevate them. People are elevated by taking prasadam, right? In the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Ye pachanchyat makaranat. What is that verse? Krishna mentions that the devotees are always habituated to taking the remnants of sacrifice. What is it? Jagdashishtashana shanto muchante sarva kilbishai. Kilbishai means sinful reactions. So they're eradicated. Sinful reactions are eradicated by taking the remnants of sacrifice, which is prasadam. Right? So that's why we distribute prasadam to people, is to purify them. And then by becoming purified, they become peaceful. And when they're peaceful, then you can instruct them. We want people to become peaceful and settled so that we can then give them instructions about Krishna consciousness. That's for their benefit. Just like here, Akura is giving instructions to Dhritarashtra for his long-term spiritual benefit. Of course, unfortunately, he wasn't able to, and we see it, sometimes we give people prasadam for years and years and years and they're still not able to receive instruction. And we also see it that we give people instruction, good instruction, but they still can't follow it. Boy, as a matter of fact, we hear instructions and still not able to follow them. So this is we have to we can learn a lot from this exchange between Akura and Dhritarashtra. One has to be tolerant and patient in preaching, because sometimes the people that we're instructing or the people that we're preaching to are not ready to hear the good advice, which means we have to be sensitive to their situation. Akura was, and also just like Vidura, they were always instructing Dhritarashtra, or trying their best to instruct Dhritarashtra. But Dhritarashtra was, sadly, as he himself admits, and this was pointed out the other day by Murali, but it's in the story here, Dhritarashtra was too attached to his sons. And because of that bond of affection, bond of attachment, then he couldn't act. He could hear, as we can see here, he could hear and he could appreciate Akura's good instructions. Interesting. But because of his affection for Duryodhana and his sons, he wasn't able to act on it. And in the next couple of verses, he gives excuses why he can't act. Bit of a rascal, actually. And we see that. We see that in the. You see this often, especially when you're preaching in to people from the subcontinent of India. You know, they'll say, yes, 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 yes. But I'll surrender to Krishna when Krishna wants me to. Right? I have to follow my karma. The course has already been set. Right? And so therefore I must do what I must do. And that's not surrender to Krishna. You fool. You can surrender to Krishna. Now, if you want to, but the fact of the matter is you don't want to. That's what Dhritarashtra is saying. I can't do it. I'm bound by my karma. But actually, all that means is, I don't want to do it. That's what it means, translated into English. Or in any language. I don't want to do it. But at least he's being very gentlemanly about his refusal to follow his instructions. Very respectful. And appreciative. And in fact, it's interesting because Dhritarashtra goes on then to... You know, Dhritarashtra is actually a very elevated personality, as is will be outlined here. Very elevated. He's an associate of Krishna, practically a relative of Krishna, practically for all intents and purposes. He actually is very elevated, but this fault, this very bad fault of being too attached to the to his evil sons, if you like. But otherwise, very, very respectful, very, very appreciative of Akrura's instructions. So does anyone have any comments or questions on any of these points?
Respect.
Good question. Association. Getting good association. It's one of the reasons why I feel personally that we if we have devotees who were brought up in the Indian culture working together with those who are born in the West, then they get the benefit of that association, because still, at least, with the generations of devotees that are coming out of India, they still have that culture ingrained within them. Although they also have this other problem that Dhritarashtra has. But at least culturally it's there. Culturally it's there. That's not bad. That's a good thing. And they also benefit from the Because the Western devotees will tend to give up things. They can be quite renounced fairly easily. Although, you know, dig deeper and deeper and you find the attachments. With everybody, you know, the deeper you dig, the stronger the attachments will be, because that's what's binding us, you know, in our false ego. But good association, hearing submissively also, regularly hearing the Bhagavatam, hearing the instructions and, you know, imbibing the mood, because this is really a mood, if you like, of submission, of inquiry, of rendering service, seva. It's the culture. It's our culture. You know, and really when you think about it, we're all servants. Right? When you think about it, we're all servants. We're either serving our mental concoctions or our sensual inclinations. This is the real point of much of Prabhupada's analysis of the svarupa of the living entity is that we're always a servant. In the material world, we're serving material things, but we're always serving. Serving our family, serving our society, serving a boss, or, you know, serving the stomach, serving the tongue, serving whatever. We're always serving. So, you know, we have to learn the right mood or mode of service, cultivate the right service attitude. And we can learn that by regularly hearing the Vedic scriptures, regularly hearing the Bhagavatam. And by that regular hearing of the Bhagavatam, then we're going to be associating with the devotees who embody that mood of service, for example. That's one example. That's association. By associating with the Bhagavatam, we associate with the very exalted devotees who have that. But then also within our communities of devotees, we train people also. That's what the Brahmachari and the Brahmacharini Ashram is meant for. It's meant for training us in a service attitude. So the Brahmacharis, for example, would go and beg alms on behalf of the Guru. Right? Which is, you know, whether you come from a Brahmana's family or whether you come from a Kshatriya's family or an elevated Vaishya family, you would have to go out and beg alms, which is a really menial service on behalf of the spiritual master. Right? If the spiritual master tells you to go and clean the schoolhouse, then you go and do it. And regardless of where you come from. That teaches then this mood of just humble service. I'm a servant and I just do what I'm told. So training is required, modelling by the senior devotees. They also have to model the appropriate behaviour so that attitude of submission, if you like, is learnt and taught. And this is the advantage of Gurukul, of a Gurukul upbringing, because you're taught that right from the word go. Is that right? Did you learn the lesson? Yes. Just enough. You learned just enough to get by. Yeah, it's a tough one. I used to think, the temple president, who does he think he is, always telling everybody what to do? Why should I do what he tells me to do? Then I realised, it says in the Bhagavad Gita that we should serve the devotees. We should serve the spiritual master. The spiritual master says we should serve his representatives. Huh? It took me a while to adjust my consciousness to the fact that, even I didn't have any real affinity or friendship, if you like, with a person who happened to be superior to me. But I realised, this looks like this might be the culture of ISKCON. You render service to the devotees, whether you like them or not, whether you have some affinity for them, whether you know them at all. You know what I mean? That's hard to get over that. Do you think you're going to tell me what to do? We just have that kind of, you know, that covering in our consciousness. But in order to make advancement in Krishna consciousness, you actually have to modify that kind of a mentality. You have to do it. You have to become a servant of the devotees. And you know, I have seen devotees have major problems in their spiritual life if they don't adjust to that mentality. Especially in our leadership, I've seen it in our leadership. To give a good example, Tamal Krishna Goswami was a very strong and forthright character, to say the least, and a leader within our society. But on occasion, his forthrightness would get him in trouble, even with Prabhupada, which he himself would admit. But his good quality, even if he made a mistake, apparently made a mistake, you know, if he made a mistake, it was always perhaps in over enthusiastically applying some of the principles of Vedic culture. If he made a mistake, you know, they were never very, they were not serious blunders where it was just, you know, completely at fault, but rather misapplication of a principle. And Prabhupada would chastise him, or even the GBC would sometimes have to chastise him. But he would accept it. Okay, this is what Prabhupada wants. Well, Prabhupada told him to go to China. Even Prabhupada told him to go to China. He argued with Prabhupada. Don't think it's a good idea for me to go to China. Prabhupada said, no, you've got to go to China. Huh? But he accepted it. This is the thing. He accepted his chastisement, even if it came from his godbrothers. Yet, I've seen those who don't accept that authority, then they have major problems, major difficulties in their spiritual life. So, you know, we have to accept an authority. We're servants. We can't deny the fact that we're servants. We are always a servant. Whether we're in Maya or whether we're in Krishna conscious, we're serving someone. So better serve Krishna and Krishna's devotees. And it's difficult to learn that. It's hard to learn that sometimes. So by training and by, you know, leadership, if you like, we need that. You know, in the Western culture, it's no, you don't bow down to anybody. You're not going to tell me. Who are you to tell me what to do? But our culture is, yes, I accept that I am a servant and I accept your instructions and I'll follow them. Right? Even if it's difficult. And even sometimes we may be following an instruction which is not correct. But still, out of deference, we follow it. Because we have systems whereby we can rectify those who are misleading or giving the wrong instructions. We may follow. The Prabhupada said, if a temple authority is giving you an instruction which is not correct, you should follow it, but then take it to a higher authority who can then rectify the situation. Huh? So it's not that we, you know, just blindly follow, but we follow with a mood of submission and inquiry so that we clarify things and can sort out discrepancies also. But all within that sort of, within that culture of respect.
Respect, should it be like automatically there, or would it be developed through a relationship?
It's usually not automatically there, in my experience. Can be, yeah. Well, obviously, it's got to be developed. If it's not there, if it's not automatic, how many people automatically come into the temple, you know, and just say, "Here I am, Krishna. Here I am, you know, Prabhu. I'm a soul surrendered unto you. I'll do whatever you tell me to do."
So respect's like not another entity that's just out there. It's something to do with us.
It's part of the culture. Yes, part of it's within us actually. And, you know, we find devotees do come to the temple and say, yes, I want to surrender to you, but then they go off and do their own thing. No? I've come here just to serve Krishna. And then we discover that actually that's that is one of the reasons why they're here, but they're here for other reasons as well. I've come to get a husband, I've come to get a wife, I've come to make money, I've come to get relief from my distress, I've come to... so many things. Huh? But if that's, you know, if the seed of submission is there, then all of those other things can be purified. And we even tolerate people who come here for, you know, all sorts of reasons. Because we know that by the association of the devotees, they will gradually become purified. Mm. Alright, I think we should finish here. One question? Zanama? Comment? Yeah.
I find that we're always denouncing Western culture. I don't know if it's completely appropriate or acceptable, because I find that a lot of people in the West, you know, like, their dealings are actually more congenial, more considerate, and I've had experience of people dealing with me in India. Like, often people in India, they don't mind me keeping me waiting for a long time, or, you know, I'll try to hit you off in some way or another. Some
at least they do it in a respectful fashion. You're right.
But it's like, right. In the West, the only people seem to be like, you know, they have a lot of
their
consideration.
Yes, but...
nature, they're considerate.
Look, there's good and bad...
We always denounce the Western society as a whole. Like, it's just all...
Well, but we do, because there's no connection with Krishna. That's why we soundly denounce it, because it is the farthest remove that you can possibly be, even if there's some ephemeral etiquette. There's no connection with Krishna consciousness. That's faulty. That's why we do it. Because there's no...
In some ways, India is more involved because they do have that connection, but they're trying to forget it. They're trying to...
Well, we criticise them too. We'll criticise everybody.
I think we should try to see the good in... You know, there's also good in Western culture. Like, a lot of beautiful things have also come from Western culture, like music, art, and...
Yeah, look, even Prabhupada didn't, you know, Prabhupada encouraged the utilization of the best of all worlds, and he would give the example of the blind man and the lame man. So we tend to denounce Western culture because of its lack of spiritual vision, but Prabhupada likened that to the blind man who had physical assets which could be used. And yet he would say the Asian or the Indian culture is like the lame man who has vision. So you put them together. They don't have the technical or the physical expertise, if you like, although that's changing now. And so you put them together. We combine them, and we do that. We combine them together and take the best of both. And with that, Prabhupada said, you know, I want the expertise of the Western culture combined with the spiritual culture of India, then we get a positive result. But you know, if a person is a mudha, then we'll call him a mudha. That's what Krishna says. Prabhupada says, I'm not calling. That's Krishna's saying.
That applies to anyone anyway.
Of course. So that's what I'm saying. You know, Dhritarashtra is actually a mudha. But at the same time, we also appreciate his elevated mudha. That's what the Bhagavatam says. Because in the next verse, Dhritarashtra reveals his foolishness. But then the verse after that, he reveals his elevated character as an associate of Krishna. So you've got this dilemma. On the one hand, he's behaving so foolishly, so attached to his sons, who are behaving in ways which are so unbeneficial for everybody, including themselves. He's going to destroy themselves, yet he's affectionate to them. But then on the other hand, he can offer these wonderful prayers, he can show appreciation for Akura's instructions. Right? So what do we call that? We call that a paradox. Right? It's so paradoxical that here we have such an elevated person behaving in such a foolish way. That's paradox. So, you know, we can identify those, the good and the bad. Devotee's good at doing that. Paramahamsa, Prabhupada says, like a swan-like man. The swan's good quality is it can extract milk from a mixture of milk and water. It'll take out the milk and leave the water. So devotees are able to extract the goodness and leave the, you know, the superfluous. So we can take the good, definitely. Alright, I think we should finish. Gantaral Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Prabhupada ki jai.